Listen and stream the only talk radio, Freedom 106.5, for the only talk that matter.
It's Freedom 106.5 FM. This is where you speak your mind. It's just about 32 minutes after 4. You don't have a countdown thing that announcers usually do, presenters usually do. You know, I don't know how to do it. So, just like 32 minutes after 4. If you're now joining us, it's not Davey. Even though he songs like this sometimes, he sounds a little, you know, a little girlish, but that's okay. Hey, Davey. It's Carrie being a company. And guys, we're going to jump straight into something very interesting. I have a very special guest with me here, Miss Rhea Kalis. And we're going to be talking about demystifying the myths of mental health. Mental health has been a thing, apparently, and it's only within the pandemic, I remember, that's when it started getting bigger. And even now, people are taking mental days. There are even children in schools taking mental days at school. I mean, I want a mental day from work. How am I going to get that? But anyway, let me tell you all about Rhea. She's a psychologist. Ooh. And Rhea Vanessa Kalis, also known as Miss Kalis, is a qualified psychologist with a focus on marriage and family. She holds an art therapy dip 1 and 2 from the UK, as well as an MSc and BSCS in psychology. Now, in addition to that, she is a certified mediator at level 1 and 2 and has obtained various certificates, including mind mapping. Ooh, I want to know about that. Mental health and psychosocial support, conflict de-escalation, managing with social isolation and guidance and counseling. Example, school support. I know that was a lot. But Ms. Kalis, she works as a school counselor at the Ministry of Education in Trinidad and Tobago, West Indies, while also managing her own private practice organization, Axum Counseling and Development Consulting Services Limited. She founded Axum Counseling and Development Counseling, which aims to equip individuals and organizations with the knowledge to discover new abilities and potential to achieve personal and organizational goals. She even leads a team that offers a range of services, including individual, group, and family counseling, as well as tailored workshops for different organizations. Now, it's a very, very, very long CV, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, you seem a little modest. I'm not hearing you too much. Bring the mic closer to you. Yes. Let me hear you now.
Good afternoon.
Yes, and welcome, Rhea. Welcome to Freedom 106.5 FM.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Carrie, and good afternoon, Trinidad and Tobago.
Yeah, right. Now we could skip all the other
introductions.
Yes,
that's fine.
Yeah, you're okay. Everything all right?
That's
sure?
Fine. That's wonderful.
You're looking like a little tense. You're frightened. You know, nobody ain't seeing you. We just hearing you.
I'm good, man.
Nice.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. So I know we are going to be demystifying the myths of mental health. What does that mean in general? Demystifying the mental health.
Okay.
The myths of mental health.
So mental health, as you would have indicated, is something that we all took for granted. And even, as you said, prior to the pandemic, it was something that we would look at and say, well, okay, you probably need a mental health day. But now we're recognizing, since after the pandemic, that it's a little more than that.
Mm-hmm.
It's about being able to understand mental health is a area that you have to be concerned about as much as your physical, your spiritual, emotional health. So it's about just having a conversation this afternoon about some of the myths we have entertained about mental health and how it is mental health should be an area that we explore, we have as an open discussion, and taking action to ensure that we all, every single citizen of our country, maintains and improves their mental health should they be faced with certain circumstances.
But what would you rate the dealing with mental health in Trinidad and Tobago? Because I mean, I could be wrong, because I've only really heard much about mental health and, you know, treating mental health cases only during the pandemic.
Yeah.
So now is it prevalent now that persons are seeking interest in, you know, rectifying or even seeing about their mental health?
I would say it always existed, but because of the concern with mental health during the pandemic, it's something that's a little more evident now than before. So, for example, you would find that when we were in lockdown and we could not go, persons who resided alone had to depend on support from family calling through video calls, through Zoom, through WhatsApp. And we had a conversation in terms of being in isolation, what it would have done to some of us, or even having loss of relatives, because I've done a lot of grief and loss workshops. And you hear stories of persons who would have lost a relative and they were unable to even attend the funeral because they would have been in quarantine. So I don't think mental health is an issue that we now started to talk about. I think it existed before, but I think because of the pandemic, it's a little more openness to having that discussion that may have been still a little bit kind of sidelined in the past.
But is mental health still a taboo? Like, is it that if someone comes to you and say, Ria, I feel something is wrong with my mental. I feel that I need to get it checked out. I feel I need to talk to you. Is it something that somebody would openly come and say to you, or even like if you're standing somewhere in a public place and somebody say, hey, look, Ria, she does deal with, you know, persons and the mental. Would they come out and say it like normal without feeling ashamed or bad or anything like that?
Unfortunately, no. Still, there's some level of stigma towards mental health. And as I often talk about, you will see about your physical health. So like you break a foot, right? You're happy to say, okay, I broke a foot, I'm on some sick leave. But with the mental health, is not something that is openly talked about. And I think there are a lot of hurting people out here, right? And we don't feel, it doesn't feel safe to talk about mental health matters. Because at the end of the day, once you hear mental health, there's that connection that you're crazy. Right? It's only recently there's a move from saying, well, the person's in a madhouse. Even now, you would still, depend on where you go, hear somebody say, well, they had to go to a madhouse, when the name of the place is Saint Anne's Psychiatric Hospital, right? So the conversation on mental health has been ongoing, and I think there's a need for some level of action, sustainable action, to ensure that it's something where we can openly and freely discuss. And I hope that as we have this discussion today, people who may be experiencing some distress, because mental health is simply about being able to cope and developing that resilience to deal with different stressful experiences you have in life. So most of us, we go through life, but then at some point, as life always happens, you are faced with something that stresses you out. And sometimes the resilience to cope with something that is outside. So for example, I remember having a client where they lost one relative, right? And by the time they were coping with the loss of a relative, they also had another loss. Then they had a diagnosis of illness as well. So sometimes it's okay if it's one thing, you could find some way to cope. You have the social support, you have the family support. But then when it starts to multiply into one challenge on top of another, we can, any of us, I myself included, you can face yourself with challenges. And how do you cope with all of these things happening at one time? And unfortunately, we live in a society in the Caribbean where we feel that to say, okay, I'm having a mental health challenge, is going to be difficult. So most times somebody might say, I just need somebody to talk with.
Right?
So it's the safer approach to them, because nobody wants to be viewed as crazy. We all, from time to time, will experience different challenges, and getting that support is healthy. There's absolutely nothing wrong with it.
Now you brought up the instance where you brought up the example that, you know, anytime you talk about mental health, people think, oh gosh, you're mad and you're crazy and you're madhouse. But what's your opinion on how we deal with mental health issues as a society? What's your take on that? How do you think we treat with it?
Well, I'm happy to see that Ministry of Health has a number of mental health and wellness centers now open. But I mean, for a country of over 1.3 million people, we still only have one psychiatric hospital, right? And even from my experience in schools, they are not sufficient of us. We are faced with so many issues on a day-to-day basis that sometimes you can't deal with all at the same time. Sometimes some get left behind, unfortunately. So as a society, we are trying. I'm seeing the introduction of psychiatric outpatient institutions and so. But we still have some way to go, but I'm seeing little bit of strides being made in that direction.
And right. That's good. That's actually good. Because now that you mention it, it just ran across my mind. We really only have one mental health institution. Yeah. And I don't think that it's an institution where it's too too big.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we should have one probably in San Fernando and one in Grandy and, you know, in different parts of the country.
Yeah.
That sounds like a challenge. Now, that is a challenge.
Yes, it is.
What are other mental health challenges that you face on a daily?
Well, I work generally with children in the schools. Out in my private practice, I work with a range of clientele. Most of the time, depression, anxiety, my areas I indicated to you before we started the show is in marriage and family. So you find a lot of persons going through a separation or divorce. They are faced with some level of challenges in adjusting to coping with this significant change that's happening, especially party who was not in favor of a separation or divorce. So the point is, across all areas, you can face mental health challenges. There isn't any one I could itemize and say. However, the stigma remains about getting help. And our society seems to think that, okay, if something is wrong, just go and probably have a drink or just sit down and pray, depending on what is your background, and all will be okay. But sometimes you actively need to seek that help, seek a professional help to get that support to deal with whatever may be the challenge you are currently facing.
Now you mentioned anxiety. Is anxiety and mental health correlated in any way?
To some extent, because now we all could have anxiety. There's general anxiety, like you're going and do something. I've never feel a level of anxiety here. I've never been on a radio station before, right? So I feel a level of anxiety. So general anxiety is perfectly normal.
Right.
However, when the anxiety is sustained, so we coming back to using the example of the pandemic. After the pandemic, I know of people who up to now refuse to leave their homes. Right? So you're talking about 2+ years, and there are certain persons that they are scared. They are not leaving home at all.
Right.
So that kind of anxiety now translates into mental health, because you are so fearful, you imagine things even if it's not actually happening. And that is the point at where you need to seek help. Now, I operate in the capacity of a psychologist. There's also the psychiatric side of it, where that person probably may need to be medicated, but I deal with more the support side in terms of counseling.
Right.
So depending on how severe it is, again, this is where treatment and assessment centers is important. I see, as I said, they're starting to do that, but we still have a good bit of work to do in that area.
Right. Yeah? Now, big question. If you have mental health problems or issues or challenges, are you considered mad?
Well, I asked a psychologist that, so I never say. So, and personally, I think it's no, because again, I use the example of if you break a hand, you break a foot, you're going to go to the hospital, you're going to say, listen, I feel some pain here, can you do an x-ray, can you check?
Yeah.
Yet still, when there's mental health issues, you are scared, you are feeling like you may lose your job, you might be stigmatized, you might be viewed in a certain way. At the end of the day, mental health is part of our overall well-being, just like where you're physical, you have your spiritual, mental health is part of that. So no, you're not crazy. It's just we all face stressors at times where we need that additional support. And I want to encourage someone who might be listening out here who needs that support, please reach out. Right? Sometimes we go into depression, people go into depression and they feel as if there's absolutely no one they could talk to, and they stay there and they are suffering when there is help available.
Yeah. Because I mean, why would somebody be considered mad when they have mental health issue? Why, where that word came from, or why is it meshed together? Why is that word mad meshed together with mental health issue? You know,
I it's a question I've often wondered about myself. Well, first you have to understand the history of where psychology and mental health. It was actually considered that if somebody had mental health, they had some spiritual thing or they need some deliverance or so. Then there was also the aspect of where they had to be isolated, right? So these are some historical aspects of it. But madness is identified when it is, you can't quite put a hand on how someone is operating. So you know something is not a normal way in which the person operate. Something seems like they may get up, they may go back and sleep, they're not talking, they sit down, they scream, and you just say, okay, can't figure it out, the person mad. And I think starting that whole conversation with use, because even our use of language in terms of how we define mental health is also playing a role in persons not reaching out for help. So you have people come and say, well, go, look, you should get over this, or you need to go and visit a shrink, right, or a doctor in America, in England. This is customary. You know, it's normal. You actually have medical coverage that caters for these things when you visit a mental health. However, there's a sense of reluctance, even when somebody recognizes they need professional help most times, unless some family member, an employer, or so says to them, listen, you have to kind of go. And again, mental health support supposed to be voluntary. Of course, in cases where it could be, then you feel somewhat compelled to go, but it's not something where most persons willingly pick up themselves and go.
And go.
Yeah.
Oh.
And that is so unfortunate, because again, nothing's wrong with you if it is you have mental health challenges, because all of us, think about, you put a glass and you put some stones and you keep packing your glass with stones, and now there's no more room in the glass and you're still trying to pack stones. Eventually that glass is going to crack, right? Because the stones they put in a glass. And sometimes in life, situations, internal and external, to us can come across, we can be faced with, and we end up where we need that support to just be able to develop new coping mechanisms. We are creatures of habit, so we are accustomed to doing things that suit them. And when that normal routine is disrupted, whether it's through internal circumstances, and when I say internal, I mean in terms of the family, in terms of the household, or external, a disaster, a loss of a job, all these different things, it's a change. And without getting that support, your family will come and talk to you most of the time. They say, well, you can get over that as yet. You know what's going on with you? Just get up and just go and do or say prayers. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying all these things not important, but sometimes you feel like, okay, something is wrong with me, I should just be able to get up and go. And even when you can't get up or go, you start to have feelings of guilt. And that guilt now leads to depression. You see how we spiraling down as we go along. And you're just there and you have no one you feel you could talk to, because as far as people are concerned, get up and just go and continue
go about your life. Now, you made mention to someone is not going to get up and go by themselves. What causes that? What causes someone to not seek professional help?
It's so many things I could speak to in terms of...
Give me about five reasons. Because, I mean, a lot of persons are listening right now, driving in their cars, heading home, and they are facing so much mental health issues, and some of them don't even know what to do. So, tell us, if the person is not getting up and going, what can they do? How can they reach out, or how can they go seek that professional help?
Well, I don't want to give an easy answer, because there's no easy answer in Tobago. There's no easy answer. One of the things I recognize is, one, fear, two, not knowing where to go for help, three, sometimes finances in terms of seeking that professional care. Sometimes you may work in a company or organization that does not have an employee assistance program,
right?
That caters to your psychological well-being, right? So you don't have the finances otherwise to seek that help. For lack of family support, ironically, sometimes the same family will, I have clients who recognize they need the help. And when they say, listen, I'm going to talk with someone, you don't need that. You just song and relax yourself and just go and say prayers and drink something. It'll be okay. You know, so that lack of family support. And finally, sometimes just a sense that if you do that, you're admitting that something may be wrong with you, for want of a better word.
Oh, okay, okay. Let's talk about mental health, and it can't be seen most times. What's up with that?
And that is why mental health has remained such, because again, you may see certain things like somebody operating erratic ways, they get up, they shouting, but it's not something you see. You may have an inkling, okay, this person not operating in what we call our sphere of normal. And when I say normal, you have to tell an adult, get up, have a shower, all these different things, and you say, okay, something is not right. They may have lost their job. I just created a scenario, and you find they not get up. They'll say, well, okay, they'll get over it. And a few days pass, they're still doing the same thing. A week pass, and a month, they're doing the same thing. Then you'll say, get up and just go and dress, brush your teeth, and get up and get dressed and go out. But it's a little more than that. And because mental health illness cannot be seen, it's something that has to be assessed. And most times that's done by a psychiatrist, as I indicated. It's sometimes dismissed because it's not something that is tangible and visible to the eyesight. So the average person, as average citizens, will song and say, okay, something seems to be wrong. But without doing, even me as a psychologist, you have to do certain assessments. Most of the time, depending on what is the mental health issue, you may find a psychiatrist has to be the one to see you, where you can get that assessment done, and in some cases then further support from there based on what you discover.
But since it's not physically seen, do you think that it's easy to ignore?
Unfortunately, yes.
Wow.
Yes, that's the point, yeah. Because it's not something they could see. So even when more and more I have clients who reach out for help of their own selves, so more and more you're seeing they are no longer concerned about stigma. They just know they need the help, and they reach out for the help. And when you reach out and tell most of the times family, friends, listen, I'm not doing okay, it's a lot to cope with, they will be like, look, just break it down, and it's a dismissive thing because you're not seeing it. But most times when people, depression, sadness, you'll find they cry home in by themselves where nobody's seen. So because they can't see it, and because some people are able to have such excellent ways in which they cope, they manage through these things, you just say, okay, you know what, they're okay. I don't understand what they're saying. Look, they function, they look okay. But looking at somebody is no indication of whether or not you are facing mental health challenges.
Right. Because why I ask that is, it's not visible, but you would somehow feel it.
Yes.
Right? And these feelings or these way of thinking, because in my mind, and you could correct me if I'm wrong, it would be a particular way you would be thinking. Yeah. So is it that you would be thinking of depressive thoughts, or, you know, you would be lingering on all these sad things?
Yes.
So what I want to find out from you, Rhea, what are some, should I say, symptoms, if that's a good word to say for it? What are some ways persons can identify that they are going through they have a mental health issue?
Right.
How can they identify this?
Well, one of the things would be that you find yourself operating different from what you're accustomed to. So, for example, if you had a loss of a relative and you find yourself 3 years down the road lying in bed crying, you're unable to function, do your normal day-to-day functions. We talked about anxiety earlier, right? So again, there's general anxiety, but a higher level of anxiety would be where you can't function, you don't want to be around people, all these different things. There are different things that depends on what could be the mental health challenge will determine how they respond in a situation like that. So I can't really generalize and say it's clear-cut things, because it depends on the scenario, the situation that the client would have been faced with. That is what would lead to them maybe developing. Now, two people could face the exactly same thing.
Yeah.
And one person is very resilient, meaning they're able to find new coping mechanisms. They have a strong social support, family support system, and they are quite okay. And somebody else may have the same exact situation, but again, lack of family support, not having finances. So mental health, in terms of the impact, is based on different scenarios. So to say there's one clear-cut identifying way to say, okay, this person's mental health is compromised as compared to somebody else, is not always that easy.
No. But, you know, it wouldn't it have some common symptoms? Wouldn't it have, like, let's say, for instance, someone is crying uncontrollably all the time, or you're locked up in your room, you're in the darkness, like that. Like, that's what I wanted to find out, because we all... In my mind, I think we all have some challenges that we deal with.
Of course.
But it's just as you said, the different coping mechanisms, and some work, some don't.
Yeah.
So whilst, let's say for instance, me, I will cry for the whole day, and then the next day I'm back up and I'm running, and you know, I got over whatever was happening to me.
Right.
But then it may be somebody else, they don't have the coping mechanism to deal with it. So what I wanted to find out, now we have news coming up at 5 p.m. and I know that we'll squeeze this in, but what are, like, some common symptoms that persons can look out for, you know, to say, hey, hear this, I really need to check with a professional to see if I'm really having these mental health issues. What are some symptoms?
Okay, so, like, one would be isolation, unwillingness to be around persons, right? But again, I want to add a disclaimer. I understand what you're asking, but again, it depends on the circumstances the person faces. So if you're over a long period of time, you're isolating yourself, you cry uncontrollably, there are situations what will contribute to that. If you had the loss of a relative, but 3-4 years, you will still cry, but if it's uncontrollably, you can't function to do anything for the day. A general sense where you feel nervous about leaving the house, if even for a minute. A wide range of things, you know. Again, it depends on the situation, because if somebody's crying uncontrollably and just 2 months ago they lost their spouse, then that is part of their grieving process. So that person is not considered having a mental health. It's just you are grieving the loss. But once you see someone isolated and they repeatedly talk about depressed, they feel depressed, right? They are staying away from others. They don't want to leave the house. They get up maybe night screaming and shouting. They're doing something different to what they are accustomed doing. Then that might be indirectly Which is a case of the family needing to reach out to someone to get that help for them.
All right. Well, it's just about 3 minutes away from the top of the hour. And I know when we come back from the news, we're going to be discussing two things. I'm going to put you there one time, putting you on spot. We're going to be talking about, you know, children and how they deal with mental health and how you deal with them. Because I know you work with the school system, the Ministry of Education. And I'm very sure that there are a lot of children, you know, coming to see you because... Yeah. One thing I always say is that we as adults, we just be stressed out, you know. Yeah. We just be depressed sometimes, you know. And I'm very sure children are as well.
Yes, definitely.
And because they are children, we adults tend to not take it on. So I know we're going to be discussing more about that. And I want to jump a little bit into the relationship and marriage because, it out there, it real. And a lot of persons are going through divorces and you know, they probably need to hear this part of the segment. All right, Ria? So we're going to take a break for news, and then when we come back, we're going to be discussing more, all right?
Okay.
So, guys, I have with me Ria Kalis, and we are talking about demystifying the myths of mental health. We have the news coming up. Satish is already here, and he's ready to lay it out on you. So when we come back, it's much more. So keep it locked. It's Freedom 106.5 FM.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.
Welcome back. This is Freedom 106.5 FM. This is where you speak your mind. Carrie Vina Company. And, you know, we're going to jump straight back in to demystifying the myths of mental health with Ria Vanessa Kalis. Ooh, that sounds like a nice name.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Freedom. So, I know before the news, we were speaking about, you spoke about being involved in the Ministry of Education and, you know, the mental health, dealing with students. So how is that? What is that?
Well, you know, you raised a good point right before we took the break. I remember when I was being placed in a primary school, I said to myself, but primary school trainer, happy trainer, just go to school, you eat your snacks and life is good. Until I got there, and like anybody else, and this is one of the things that... we more and more need to recognize that at any age, any socioeconomic background, you can face mental health challenges. You can face challenges. And one of the things I know Trinidad and Tobago listening on is exams. Exams is one of the biggest stressors, whether it's SCA, whether it's CSEC, whether it's CAPE, you know, the level of stress to perform, especially coming from on the angle of the parents. You know, there's the expectation, they want their child to go a certain school, and there's that level of pressure that they put on the train, along with they having their own internal pressure, they want to be able to perform to that level to attend a particular school. So it's something where we do programs in terms of helping them cope, right, managing stress, learning techniques to help them manage the volume of work they are faced with. But yes, of course, the population, elderly as well, face mental health challenges sometimes when you have an elderly parent, and sometimes parents will, children will feel guilty about putting them in a home because they have to work, they have nobody to take care of them, and they see all the finances come into play, right? Because they may not have someone at home, a caretaker, and they place them in a home, and then in some cases, they may be wondering what's happening with them at this home, what's going on with them, right? And the elderly person feels isolated at times, right? They may not have their family members able to visit every day. So, of course, any spectrum, whether it's children, young adults, adolescents, elderly, mental health can be a cause of concern depending on whatever situation you face.
But how prevalent is mental health in schools this time around? How is it?
Usually I'm wrong. Well, I can only speak for in terms of schools I'm attached to and generally, but mental health is something what's ongoing. It's usually from exams. It's usually from that stress and pressure to perform well. Like in my case, I'm in a primary school. To perform and to be successful and achieve the school, most of the time your parents want you to attend. So it's something that varies. And of course, there's the crime is no stranger to any of us. So you have so many trends as well who are losing relatives, parents to crime. And one minute they have their parents and the next minute they are gone. Right? And they have to manage with the grief and loss attached to that. So that eventually, because again, most every time, unfortunately, trainer take and said, okay, they're not aware, they're not going to take on this, it's not going to affect them. But quite often, they as well are affected by it. In terms of stats, I can't speak in terms of numbers, in terms of how prevalent it is, but I can talk to some of the issues that can contribute to mental health challenges with children in the school.
But Ria, let me ask you this, right? how can a parent listening now, how can they look at or identify or even assist or even reach out to someone who they think that, you know, their child may be having a little mental health issue? How can they look out for that as a parent?
Right. So, again, lack of appetite, right? That's a big thing, right? Especially if it's going into adolescence.
Them teenagers, you know, they have a particular way they want to look, you know.
Yes, if you see them, they're isolating, they're alone, they're not eating, they're crying a lot. They don't want to interact with anybody. They don't want to go out. They don't want to go to school. Unfortunately, as well, so many challenges in schools is also where other children harass them, right? They may feel uncomfortable. So I think sometimes, especially with having a loss of a close relative, you may find that you just want to sit at home. You're hesitant to go to school. But there's student support under the Ministry of Education. I believe most schools have someone, social work, guidance and counseling that they can reach out to, visit the school, talk with the principal, talk with the teacher, to set up an appointment to meet with that person, to express the concerns. Because, I mean, a child may come to school, they're very talkative, and then you see the opposite behavior at home. So they can avail themselves of that service on the Ministry of Education.
I'm looking at a message here. No, not that message. Not that message. Someone sent a message, but it's not relating to that. So what a parent actually have to do is actually just monitor their child and see if you're seeing any behavioral changes.
But again, sometimes, as I said, if you have five children, you're working a long shift, you're coming home 8-9 night. All you might ask, you're doing schoolwork, you pack a bag, you're ready for school the next day, right? But at some point, it's your child, you would be aware that something is not okay, and you have the support of Ministry of Education, student support, where you can reach out via the teacher, the principal, to ask, have a chat with that person where it can help you identify if there might be any concerns or so that they need to address.
All right, thanks so much. Guys, if you're now joining us, this is Freedom 106.5 FM. This is Where You Speak Your Mind. It's Carrie V holding on for Davey, and we are here with Rhea Vanessa Calise. She is in psychology, and I know that your playing field, your thing is marriage and relationships and even family. Let's talk a bit about that. I mean, we have 15 minutes again, so 15 minutes of talk about that is a little bit, I should say. But tell me more about that. Now, I am quite young, okay? For those who want to know, I'm very young, right? But I have been seeing a lot of marriages, and nowadays people are ending in divorce. Like, easy. So you'll see the big charade and then in about a month, 2 months or a year, you see, you know, couples divorce. What is that?
It's simply sometimes, you know, you get in, there's so many answers to that, right? Simply you get into a relationship, and when, you know, my grandma used to have a saying, see me and live with me. And
you face things.
That's correct. So it's really comes on to having that understanding, taking time to understand someone. One of the things I've worked with a lot is also divorce clients. So I've also experienced a divorce, and I had to use all my coping mechanisms, because especially if it is it's unexpected, right? And you're just not looking for it. You find that it's something where it changes your whole life. It's a breakdown, it's a change, a sudden change, where so many different things has to be considered, especially when children are in the mix as well. Right? It's something where you have to consider, how am I going to adjust with us separating, with us divorcing? It's a topic that I could go on and on. There's so many different areas. And sometimes you marry someone, and it's only when you get into the marriage you understand, okay, this personality, this particular characteristic. Now, all of us in any relationship has to have some understanding, some adjustments. But sometimes we find ourselves getting into relationships and wondering, how did I get into it? And then the difficulty is facing, how do you get out of it? And how do you manage in terms of getting out of that relationship? So it's a multidimensional area, and more and more with divorce, you see people saying, you didn't get over it yet. So when someone is going through a separation, divorce, you may mention to some close family and friends, and most of the time they would say, listen, by 2 months later, if you're crying, you didn't get over that yet. But it's a process, just like how you'll grieve the loss of a person who has died, divorce represents a loss, and you will grieve that process as well.
Mm.
And there's agitation within, most times within family members, for you to just move on and just get up and just go. When you have to go through a grieving process, well, not everyone, but sometimes you go through a grieving process, and it's perfectly normal. If somebody's out there listening, it's perfectly normal. So again, coming back to the same point of mental health, you see, so if somebody's crying, I don't want you to go and think that you're crying for 3 months, you have a mental health issue, because it isn't. It's just
the
simply
circumstances that's different.
Correct. The circumstances are different. Now somebody, if you want divorce or you're happy the person divorce you, you might have a party, right? That's actually something I'm seeing happening now.
People having divorce parties.
So again, it depends. So I don't want to feel going through a divorce and you're home crying and say, my goodness, something's mentally wrong with me. It's part of the process some people go through, right? Having that support system, having persons you can reach out to and talk, helps you in terms of being able to manage through the process. And even when you have children, you have to factor in that, okay, who are the children going to live with, custodial issues. So you see how far we could go in that in terms of it. Sometimes there is, if it is a peacefully poor divorce where there's co-parenting, right, you find those are the circumstances where it doesn't take that mental strain upon either of the parting partners nor the children. However, when there is conflict in terms of separation or divorce, the process of custody of property and children, you could find it goes from just that to all many different things, and you have to cope with other stressors, other factors in society while dealing with a separation and divorce.
You mentioned coping mechanisms. What is that? That sounds important.
Yes, it is. Coping mechanisms speaks to what you do when you are faced with situations. So, for example, you go home right now and you find your house is broken open. I hope that's not happening to anybody, but just using our example, the first thing you do is call the police. You'd probably call a family, call a relative. If married, call your spouse, right? And you would then do things to secure yourself and have you feel a greater sense of safety. However, if it's something totally outside, so you come home and you just get a message suddenly, hey, you had a family relative coming up the highway, they got an accident, they died. Then that's unexpected. This might have been a person supposed to bring dinner tonight.
Yeah.
And you're home waiting, you're hungry, you're stooping because you're calling them on your phone, you can't get them. Then it requires you now to think outside of the calm. We all as humans are creatures of habit.
Right.
And now find ourselves having to deal with something unexpected, totally removed from whatever you're accustomed to. You would find you have to use different approaches. So coping means how do you deal with unexpected stressors. Right? So some stressors, not all stressors are the same level. Some stressors may be minimal compared to others. So like a debt compared to, let's say, the loss of a wallet is distressing, but you can eventually go through the process, replace your credit cards, replace your license and all these things. So different stressors will cause different levels of response. So you lost a relative, it means you need social support. That might have been the main breadwinner. How do you cope now having to find yourself providing for your family? Right? And the existing ways in which you are coping, for example, saying, hey, I call your spouse, okay, we need bread, we need this when you come home. Can't work because the said provider has passed away. So then now you have to think now and you have to come outside of what you're accustomed to find different ways of managing and existing in life. So when we have these stressors, this is where coping comes in. So for example, coping might be having to find a job if you were a stay-at-home mom, right? In the loss of a husband. Or if his husband was at home and the wife passed away, he having to find a job. You have 3 children that you were at home with, who now sees about the children. So how do you cope with all this? Then you will finally reach out. You'll have to sit down and have a plan. Okay, maybe I can call an auntie. Maybe I can call my mom who could watch them, pick them up from school. So coping is simply finding ways when you are exposed to stressors that you didn't expect. I mean, nobody expects any stressors, but paramount stressors beyond the usual, then finding ways to be able to manage through it and still stay relatively sane enough, you know. I wonder what a better way of putting it.
Now, I'm going to open my phone lines. Because I really want to hear our listeners, what are their views on this. And guys, call me 627-3223-625-2257. I'm here with Miss Rhea Kalis, and we are demystifying the myths of mental health, and then we kind of delve into marriages and relationships and, you know, and how people cope with divorces as well, because we see that it have a trend. Would you agree?
Yes,
there's
I
a trend
do.
In divorce,
yeah,
divorces.
I thought COVID would have helped relationships, but I think being in space with people actually caused more divorces to happen. You know, so we are seeing an upward trend in the number of divorces that are currently happening in not just Trinidad but even the wider Caribbean.
Mm. But I know some people like the easy way out, and I would say the easy way out, which is divorce.
Yeah.
What would you have to say to someone who is, to a couple, let's say, who is, you know, thinking about divorce, but they're kind of two-minded about it? What do you suggest that they do?
It depends on the circumstances.
Ooh, this word is a big word.
It depends on the circumstances, because, like, if, for example, if you want to divorce because, like, I remember a time somebody saying they want to divorce this for because they're not squeezing toothpaste from the bottom.
What?
Obviously, that is not the issue.
Yeah.
You know, but if
it's something bigger.
Yeah, then, of course, with violence on either side is never something that is right. Right, so in a case like that, you have to get out. But let's suppose it's a normal, when I say normal, bits, you know, you'll have quarrels, you'll have disagreements. I would say try to have open communication. Most of the time, a relationship breaks down before the point of one party reaching to a divorce. It breaks down from before. So the point of leaving is not when you may have decided to leave. You would have emotionally left long before you physically leave. So depending on the circumstances, what is the scenario, what is the existing situation, then in a case, you can try to seek professional support. Right, if that is something two parties are willing to do, right, for the sake of the family. And you have to know what is the reason you want to stay, or what is the reason you think about leaving. And if it is there's any intent that you want to stay in a relationship, then it has to be both parties are willing to work to make that adjustments that is needed to ensure both parties are comfortable. I don't really like the word compromise. This is me personally, because quite often we say compromise, but I prefer the word collaborating.
Collaborating.
Yeah.
Right. Because I've been hearing compromise.
Yes,
like,
yes.
You need to compromise,
yes,
and all. Yes. And you know, you have to compromise. Yeah, because the couples throw that word out willy-nilly.
Yeah.
And you have to compromise. When I say I don't want to compromise, you know, wearing a red shoes every Wednesday. What if I don't, exactly. don't want to do that?
Yeah, because compromising means one party wins and one party loses. Now, of course, in some situations, you may do that. But at the end of the day, you want to have collaboration. And collaboration can only happen when there's communication. Right? So if you recognize, okay, the breakdown of it was based on communication, and both parties are willing to try in terms of improving that communication, then you seek some professional help. I'm available in terms of that, and whoever else you may be comfortable with, and you do that aspect in terms of reaching out. But at some points, it might have one partner wants to try to put next person wants to go. Then in cases like that, unfortunately, it's difficult for the strategies to work if it is one party is set in their mind they are leaving. Because remember, you don't leave a marriage at the point you physically leave. You would have left before.
We are getting a call at Tuesday. Hi, good afternoon, you're live.
Hi, good afternoon, Caribbean. Good afternoon to you, yes.
Hey, afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon.
Lower your volume a bit for me. We're hearing an echo.
That's good?
Yeah, go ahead. Let's hear. Talk to us.
Yeah, I've been listening to your program, and interesting, I think, especially if you're dealing with relationships at this day and age. Mental health is a serious issue. And, many times we go into relationships and we realize after that the person that we actually get married to is not really have much of a good sanity there. For what? Right? We find that out after.
We mean a good sanity.
Kind of mental sanity about them that you didn't recognize before. Why I'm saying that is because people are good at hiding things, and they will give you the side that they want you to see. Right? And I went to an event sometime about two Saturdays ago where I had to MC an event. And one of the presenters at the event made a very interesting statement. She said that, follow your heart. She was talking about relationships too, right? She said, follow your heart, but take your brain with you. Now, one of the issues with relationships is that many of us, we follow our heart. We fall in love. And because we fall in love, we are blinded to that side of the person that is showing us, you know, but you're so in love that you're prepared to overlook that.
Yeah.
Right? And then you find yourself in the relationship. This, you know, you had a second, third voice that be telling you, do not do it. Stay away from. Something isn't right. Get out of. And then you'll have people telling you the same thing. Right? And most times people go into relationships following their heart. They're so in love and they prepare to overlook these shortcomings and these things, that these red flags, and they get into the relationship expecting that in the marriage the person will change. Right? That is one of the biggest mistakes we make, and many of us, that is why relationships are not lasting the period of time that used to last long ago. A year, and in no time people get divorced. It is because we're following too much our heart and forget that God gave us our brain to think, and we're not supposed to be thinking with our heart. Right? So there's a part of relationship and romance that you have to be, it has to make sense. And you have to use your brain for it to make sense, not your heart.
Yes.
So good relation, good topic, good discussions, and continue to do a good job.
Thank you so much. Thanks for your call. Let me take this other call and then you could give your view, okay? Hi, good afternoon, you're live.
Hi, good afternoon, everybody.
Hi, good afternoon, welcome.
Hi, very interesting topic. As far as the my opinion, as far as the marriages and divorces go, people need to put a lot more thought into marrying somebody other than just love. Because love is something fleeting. You can love something now and you can lose that love early or later on in the relationship. Now the whole basis of marriage is something long lasting, or till death do us part, or something long term. And as right now, persons don't really understand the meaning of marriage. And unfortunately, a lot of people still don't understand it, and they just rush into it because of how you look, or how everybody else doing it, or, you know, it's wedding season and they should do it.
Now,
in my opinion, right, take time to know somebody, but take even more time to know yourself.
Yeah.
And know what it is you want from yourself, and what it is you look towards somebody, look for from somebody in the sense of companionship. A lot of people say things like, you had to compromise and compromise. And truth be told, compromising could be very devastating to one or both parties.
Definitely.
You know, so I don't agree in compromising. I don't agree in that all together, you know, because it's in a blind eye to a lot of things, and it could manifest into something worse, and it could make the marriage fall apart and make it miserable. Now, in that sense, I support divorce, as bad as it might sound. Yeah, because I don't see the sense in staying married to somebody and you're not happy. It don't make sense.
All right.
That's just a statistic of what the church say, or what any religious body say. You want to be happy as an individual with your partner, or if you're not happy with it, you have an option to out. And yes, it might have complications like with children and with properties and so on and so forth, but if you can make that decision to get married, you can make that decision to get divorced. And you had to stand up to the consequences of being divorced that comes with it. So, and as well too, honestly, if you're not happy in a marriage, that could contribute to mental illness as well too. Because you're supposed to be happy in your marriage. You're supposed to be happy when you get home. You're supposed to be happy with your partner, with your significant other. And if they're not giving out that happiness, and you're trying to like counseling and things, and they're not working, then I believe divorce is the best way out for your sake, mental sake, and for the betterment of the both parties. So unfortunately, that way it is now in 2023, but it seems like the more legit way to go than to try to make it work and they're not working. You know?
All right, thank you so much. Thanks for your contribution. This first caller here, now go on. Made a statement. He says marriage sometimes lead to mental health issues.
It could.
What's your take on that?
It could, because I mean, as he indicated, and I could tie the two responses in one for both callers, because one of the things I see, and even from my own divorce, I speak even from my own divorce, mm-hmm. you really have to spend time learning yourself and loving yourself before you find yourself in a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And when you grow to love yourself, then you would understand what you can offer, what you can't offer.
Yeah.
Right? And marriage, sometimes when you get into a marriage and you feel compelled to stay for whatever reason, and you are faced as a caller number two said, mm-hmm. right, this caller who just left,
yeah.
you can't find yourself so unhappy that you don't even want to get home. You will linger going home, and the slightest of things, it may not be the most annoying things your partner has done on that occasion,
yeah.
but because you are so already frustrated, the slightest of things, they might rest on a plate in a spot yep. they shouldn't, and
yeah.
you go on the basically berserk, you, yeah. you know. So marriage, if it is you are in a situation where it's unhappy, and as the caller indicated, you would have tried counseling, you would have tried that support, and it isn't working, sometimes, as it's, especially when trend is involved, it may be very much better to separate. Now, I'm not saying I support marriage or divorce, but I'm mm. saying that based on your circumstances, if it is, it's not working, mm. and you have tried the available resources, sometimes it's better to go separate ways and engage in co-parenting mm. if there's trend involved.
Mm.
One of the things I wanted to comment on the first caller, if I can.
Yeah,
I know we are getting, yeah.
yeah? We, I mean, we have probably like about 7 minutes again. Okay. So go ahead. We have
so
some time.
In the first caller, one of the things I'm seeing, and many times we enter in a relationship looking for a perfect partner. Mm-hmm. There isn't any perfect partner, because let's be real, you're not a perfect person. I'm not a perfect person. There isn't any perfect person, right? So, Carrie, if you all look see her, she's saying she's perfect, but I know better than, right? I'm certainly not perfect,
we,
you know?
We all be honest.
And sometimes, I developed this, and I think I saw it in a Tyler Perry show.
Yeah.
There's 80-20 rule. You'll get 80% of what you want, mm-hmm. and 20% you're not going to get.
Mm.
So you have to decide whether that 80% you're getting is sufficient enough, what matters, and whether you could live without that 20%.
Oh.
You see what I mean?
That makes sense.
So if it is you're sitting looking, I want a partner who's slim, I want a partner who runs every morning, I want a partner who gets up 5 o'clock and cook, I want a partner, you have a list going down the road,
mm.
then I often ask a client, okay, while you want this partner, what do you bring?
Nah, to the
and
table.
Usually they're silent.
Mm.
Because if in my mind that list should be just as long in what you bring rather than just saying what you want.
Yeah.
So I understand circumstances may happen, and as you said, see me and live with me, as we see in our Trinidad Tobago colloquial, but and then there's two different things. And are you willing to work? Is it something you want to work on? Because again, life comes on to choices.
Yeah.
So, but understand, it's not a grocery list that you can put out and say, I want this from this person. Expecting perfection from a partner sets you up for failure even before you have started.
Yeah.
And certainly as caller number two indicated, love is not a feeling. Right? Love is something where a day may get up and your partner irritates you, that is gonna happen.
Mm.
And I think we probably watch too many movies or so what paints this perfect picture. But you're going to get up a day and your partner is going to irritate you. Doesn't mean because your partner irritates you, they ask you to go out the road for something, you say I'm not going, because love is more than a feeling. Love is a principled action. Now this is not the whole of Psychology Association, this is Rhea Kallis talking, is a principled approach in terms of how you deal with someone. So if you wait a day to feel love for somebody, then the next day don't feel love, what's going to happen?
Yeah.
Right? So I just wanted to share those 2 points, but thank you callers for your input. I really appreciate it.
Someone sent a message and said, Carrie V, marriage takes a lot of compromising and meeting halfway. I know from experience, been married for 40 years plus, cherish your loved ones at all times.
Definitely. So again, I still hold to my word. I still hold to my word. I prefer to use collaborating, right?
Well, so, I'm not going to say that. I like the word collaborating,
I hold to that word collaborating, because she may think it's compromising, but it was actually collaborating. Now, collaborating simply means that we get the best of what we want. So for example, simple example, one person want to go dinner, the next person want to go for a movie. How then do we achieve that? Sometimes you may not be able to, and you're okay with it. But if you really want to go to dinner, very simplistic example, using one wants to go to a movie, you can then say, okay, let's go dinner first, which starts at 5, and then we go the movie after. That is an example of collaboration. So when we look at marriage, and we look at a marriage lasting, there also is very important that you have communication happening. Because without that, that begins the process of a marriage breaking down. So it's really, really important to have that factor central. So while they're saying compromising might be simply a case of they learn to communicate through even difficulties, because communication not just for when it's wonderful and nice, communication is even for when you have conflict and you have disagreements in any relationship.
Let me take this last call. We just have about 3 minutes again. Hi, good afternoon, Elife.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hi, afternoon, welcome.
Yes, I'm listening, but what about looking at it from this perspective? We are speaking about two different species of people, gender of people, who are wired different. So the male man is wired different, and the female man is wired different. And you have read a lot of books where you understand that the female is more emotionally inclined than the male. One book where it was written, that book about the right brain logic and the left brain emotion.
Yes.
Now, people are going into relationships without knowledge and understanding of their respective roles and how they are wired and how they are made up, and understanding how their partners need. Therein lies the problem from the beginning, because it's like two nations coming together from two different cultural backgrounds. How do you merge these different cultures? And how do you merge these different genders? For one thing, you come in from one family who teaches you one culture, and then you come in from another family who teaches you a different culture. How do you merge these cultures? So all these are factors that bears on a relationship that eventually leads into separation and divorce. Right? Because of the fact that you go into marriage counseling and things before you get married, and some people go into marriage without even going into marriage counseling. Right? But you're going to marriage counseling without understanding what is marriage, and what role do you play as the husband and what role do you play as the wife in the marriage? Because everyone can be a father, but not everyone can be a man.
Thank you so much. Caller, just have to cut you off there. We are kind of pressed for time. Ria, to close off our interview and our discussion, because I have some more questions to ask, you know, but
I'm
running out of time. What do you have to say to our listeners who, you know, partake in our discussions this afternoon?
Right. So I want to thank you all for having me, and to the listener out there, as we summarize, mental health is not necessarily something that you're ill. If it is, you're facing mental health challenges, please reach out, talk to someone. There are a number of community centers, health wellness centers I'm seeing on the Ministry of Health. Reach out to a family, reach out to a friend. Don't sit there and be in pain alone. For those persons facing relationship challenges, there are always the opportunity to reach out and get help. Let someone know, talk to someone, because help is just sometimes a phone call away. Mental challenges is not an indication of mental health illness. Don't be afraid. You are okay. You are facing challenges. You are strong, but just sometimes it's okay to ask for help.
Yes. Ria, I want to thank you so much for gracing us with your awesome presence.
Thank you so much for having me. And thank you, Trinidad and Tobago, for listening.
I really do hope that we can get you back here another time, because, I mean, mental health is something very big.
Yes, it is.
And it have different parts. And, you know, we could talk more about it, because a lot of us as citizens are facing all these mental health issues.
Yes,
and, you know, most of us, we don't know what to do.
Yeah.
Right, and I really hope that we have you back here again.
Definitely.
Guys, I have Ria Kalis here, and we were speaking about demystifying the myths of mental health as well. We were talking about, you know, marriage and divorces, because she's qualified in that, right?
Yes.
But Ria, I want to thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
I hope you have an awesome evening, and keep it safe, all right? Thank you so much.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.